You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. California port truck drivers employed by Pace Cartage have won a court judgment of over $2 million plus interest and attorney fees in a Port of Los Angeles, Long Beach wage theft case. The court ruled that they were employees, not independent contractors. Attorney Alvin M. Gomez.
Court awarded almost $2.1 million, plus there's going to be interest on that amount for the past 2 years, plus attorney fees and costs, which should exceed over $1.5 million on top of the $2.1 million.
Gomez says the independent contractor issue played a major role in this case. That's when companies misclassify workers as contractors when they are in reality employees.
Companies employ schemes in order to avoid the payment of employment tax, workers' comp, insurance, all those things that an employee should have, and they come with a scheme in order to profit from the hard work of those who actually do the work, and the companies profit by stealing the wages of these employees.
Gomez says that Pace is appealing the California Superior Court ruling. The Rebuild America Act, a five-year plan to rebuild America's infrastructure, would spend $1 trillion in a bid to create roughly 13 million jobs. That's what U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders intends with his bill introduced this week. The AFL-CIO backs the bill, as does the American Society of Civil Engineers. Senator Barbara Mikulski co-sponsored the Rebuild America Act. The bill would make specific targeted investments over a five-year period to rebuild roads, bridges, passenger and freight rail, transit, broadband, the electrical grid, and national parks. The AFL-CIO says this is a blueprint of what to do about our crumbling infrastructure and would create millions of jobs. U.S. Representative Mark Pocan is strongly against fast-track authority for the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Pocan says this deal is a bad deal for workers in many ways, and Congress should not give up its constitutional responsibility and authority on the TPP.
We're going to protect the environment. If we're going to protect American workers, if we're going to protect our food safety and our medications that come into this country, if we're going to protect our sovereignty to have local laws like Buy American and Buy Local. We need to know what's in this trade deal and giving up our responsibility as members of Congress to actually debate and to amend this is a bad deal.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from union-owned and represented Bank of Labor, member FDIC, equal opportunity lender. Bank of Labor offers a business Visa card with no annual fee and points earned with every purchase, as well as rental vehicle and travel accident insurance. More info online at bankoflabor.com.
And brought to you in part by unionjobs.com, listing open positions with unions, socially allied groups, and community organizations. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent, 1 in 260,000. The odds of him having 15 career NASCAR victories, 1 in 1.7 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism, 1 in 88. I'm Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting, here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody's business. So please, plan ahead, designate before you celebrate. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate your company, that's for sure. Hey, listen, if you have any ideas or suggestions for the program, please send them to requests@theunionedge.com. Requests@theunionedge.com. I promise you I will read them. I'm not going to promise you I may answer, but I might. We'll see. Joining us right now by phone, the next congressperson for the Pennsylvania 12th, my friend, Aaron McClellan. Aaron, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Charles. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So, hey, you know, our Republican friends are gearing up for 2016, you know, back and forth jockeying. I quit. He's no good. You know, wow. The fireworks are starting already.
Yeah, you know, this is already gearing up to be a really dicey primary for the Republicans. I watched TV the other day, and I saw all these pictures of all these middle-aged white men that are these recycled candidates, you know, Walker and Santorum, and Mitt Romney was up there. I know he's bailed out, and Bush. And you just see these same guys that we've been seeing for years and the people that they're discussing. There's really nobody interesting. I heard that Palin is actually considering it. I don't know if that's viable, but if she runs, I'll give her money because I think that would be great. If
you
she
know,
got the nomination.
I asked Emily Arrowood from Media Matters today if she knew the PAC address so I could donate to Sarah Palin. Sarah PAC. I mean, you know, because here's the deal. As long as she's in the mix, I've got more material to go over than I know what to do with. You know,
it'll be beautiful. And to see her and Hillary in a debate just might be the most incredible political moment for the Democratic Party ever. I just think that would finish it off right then and there. Because, you know, Hillary wouldn't have to worry about backing off because it would look like she was beating up on a girl. So I think it would be the greatest debate of all time. I would love it. It would be great to see Sarah Palin up there doing to the Republican Party exactly what they deserve to have done to them and representing their true values. And we get to see it. So I'd love to see her in there. But it is looking like, Jeb Bush is a big one. But I hate to say that, yeah, I think they're going to tear each other up in the primary, but you know, they always fall in line when it comes to the general. They're way better at that than we are. So don't get too excited about it, because whatever happens in the end, whoever makes it through the dust, everybody will get behind them. And the Koch brothers have already said they want to raise $1 billion for the 2016 cycle. So we have our work cut out for us, regardless of what they do to each other in their primary.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just hoping to watch the evolution of Sarah Palin learning how to speak in full sentences, you know, because, you know, I can just hear it now. You know, the teleprompter goes out, Bigfoot, grizzly bears, Benghazi, UFOs, IRS, rah, you know.
I can see Russia from my house.
Yeah, and drill in my living room, baby, drill in my living room. You know,
I know. It's ridiculous. And you know what? She's going to run around with that drill, baby, drill chant. And if you really look at the numbers, you see that under the Obama administration, we actually have more oil being produced in the United States than we ever have in history. And if we keep going at this rate, I think it's by 2016, we can be energy independent because we will be producing more oil than anybody else.
Right.
So it'll be real funny watching her, you know, going around putting around misinformation like she loves to do.
Yeah.
I have a rule. I don't ever say bad things about other female candidates. Women have enough trouble. But you have to actually be a viable candidate to you know, meet that criteria for me. And Sarah Palin has not measured up.
I'll be nice. But hey, you know, here's the other thing I want to ask you about. The Koch brothers. $889 million. We're going to put it. I'm thinking to myself, if you divide that by 535 members of the House and the Senate, holy gee, Hasserfats, Batman.
Yeah.
Really?
They know that in 2016, you're going to have a presidential race. If it is Hillary, you're going to see women turn out in droves. And what do we know? When women turn out, Democrats win. So if that happens, they know that they're going to have to be loaded for bear for money because turnout is not going to be on their side. So they are going to come to play in 2016. They want this White House back. They want to keep the House and the Senate, and they're going to spare no expense to do it. So we've got to make sure our ground game's together. We've got to make sure our fundraising is at least competitive with this, because we know they're not going to pull any punches in 16. They have a big race they want to take, and they want that White House bad.
All right, here it comes, and I know I'm going to get the mail, but I'm going to do it anyway. Remember, ladies, vote the way your husband tells you to. You betcha.
Oh, I know.
I'm going to have to get a letter from you, Aaron, telling people that I'm really not like this. It's all comedy, and I'm sorry, and I apologize, ladies.
You know what? What I tell women every day is. And a great advisor once said this to me: you're in the majority. Act like it. You are the greatest constituency in this country. You are 52%. Whatever you want, and if we show up and vote for their best interest, vote for family values, Vote for education, vote for health care, vote for working people, for a good quality education, then those things will happen in this society. If women just get out and vote, we will have those things. We will probably have a much more fiscally responsible government. All of those things can probably happen if we get more women in office. And we need more women voting for that to happen. But we get whatever we want. So we have no reason to complain if we're not voting, and we're not. There's no doubt about it.
What do we got to do, Erin? What do we got to do to get the women out there?
You know what? I really think that we need to really focus on a positive message. I think women, there are people that run a home, whether they work or not, they still are taking care of kids. They're still taking care of a budget in their house. They want somebody that has real solutions to their problems. And we have to stop dumbing down our ideas to be less bad than the Republicans. We have great ideas. We have to stop running from them. We have to start moving forward with them, and we need to explain them to people. I also would love to see labor really start to embrace women's issues. If you have a coalition of working people and women, plus the minorities that that already tend to vote Democrat, then we are unstoppable. So I would love to see our union membership do what they did 100 years ago when they first started developing and the unions started building themselves. They embraced women, not as equals, but as leaders. They loved how they connected with families, and they put them out there as just an unbelievable inspiration for the working families that they were protecting and standing in solidarity with. So I've been very adamant that a lot of our labor stand behind women, pay attention to their issues, reach out to them, talk to them about what they're struggling with, and show that they have compassion for the issues that they're dealing with every day. And I think that is an unbeatable coalition if we can do that.
Absolutely. Now, Erin, I definitely have probably 15 or more years on you. I want to ask you, it's very important. You know, here in studio, we've got two fine professional young women who get the job done on a daily basis. And how do we reach out to them? I mean, you know, if they're willing to listen to me, an old guy, you know, it's got to be doable. So how do we reach out to them?
Yes, you do, and it is doable. If you look at the 2008 primary, the Barack Obama generation was half the size of the Hillary Clinton generation, and he won. And he won because he did what data has shown time and time again we need to do to get young people. We need to give them something to be a part of. Labor tends to go out and tell young people, well, you need to support the Democratic Party, or you need to support working class issues because you wouldn't have this if it wasn't for us. That's wrong. A really great Cornell study showed that when they interviewed young people, if you gave them something to be a part of, a coalition that they actually felt that they belonged to, they went out and voted. And that's what Barack Obama gave young people. That's why young people went to their parents and said, hey, you know, your generation screwed it up enough. Give us a shot. This is the guy we want. And parents voted for him. That's how that was done. He did an incredible job by making young people feel like they were part of something, by speaking to them in a way that really related to their issues and their ideas, and the idea of hope and something positive and something inspirational. You know, this was sort of the JFK of our generation, somebody really talking to us in a way that we could grab onto. That can be done, but we've got to get out there and talk to young people that way. And that's just not what's happening in our politics right now.
Erin, you know, I got to tell you, you're on top of it. You know what's going on. We appreciate it. You're a dynamic person, and I think you're going to do wonderful things or continue to do wonderful things for Pennsylvania in the 12th District. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk to you again here very soon.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Charles. You take care. Have a great weekend.
You too. Erin McClellan, bye. I appreciate it very much. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge. Labor's Talk Radio.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm John Whitehouse. Conservatives pointed to an intense blizzard that hit the Northeast this week as evidence to disprove climate change. Eric Bolling, a co-host of Fox News' The Five, argued that less snow disproves global warming.
After all the catastrophic warnings, all the doomsday forecasts, the blizzard of 2015 hardly blew through the Big Apple after all. Many parts of the Northeast have been hit very hard, but the fact is meteorologists blew it. And so did the climate change alarmists, climate alarmists who are already blaming global warming for the storm even hit.
Radio host Rush Limbaugh claimed that more snow disproves global warming.
They're blaming global warming on massive winter storms. We got more snow, we got more winter storms happening in this country. The years are not getting warmer, and yet they continue to hit everybody with global warming.
In reality, climate science is firmly established. And according to Kevin Trenberth, a climate scientist, warmer ocean temperatures as a result of global warming played a key role in contributing to the severity of the blizzard. For more on this and other exciting stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor World Report recorded on Friday, January 30th, 2015. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, the European Union tackles its depression-like unemployment with billions of euros. Women in Lebanon form the first migrant workers' union in an Arabic country. Canada is importing more migrant workers and mistreating them. And two cement companies in a huge merger are ignoring their workers in the process. All that plus the Labor Start report of union activities around the globe. This is Radio Labor. There are more than 25 million workers officially unemployed in the 28 countries of the European Union. The EU has decided to tackle its 12% unemployment crisis by implementing an investment plan worth 315 billion euros, about $360 billion. The International Labour Organization, the ILO, has welcomed the EU's investment plan, but warns that if the money isn't invested where it's needed, the resulting increase in jobs could be much less than anticipated. Daniel Johnson of UN Radio reports.
It's not every day you hear someone turning their nose up at billions of euros, but that's just what International Labour Organization economist Raymond Torres sounded like on Wednesday.
If the investment plan is not well designed, the employment impact would be very small. Only 0.4 million new jobs by 2018, so very little.
Mr. Torres was discussing the 315 billion euro stimulus package to kickstart the eurozone economy. The so-called Juncker plan could fail if it doesn't encourage sufficient private investment, he warned, but it could create 2.1 million jobs if all goes well, according to the ILO. Mr. Torres said it was important that small companies in struggling eurozone countries had access to investment since they create more jobs. The European Investment Bank could help by putting in place credit guarantees to protect banks wary of dispensing loans after the 2007 global crisis, he added. Daniel Johnson, United Nations.
There are millions of migrant workers employed in Arabic countries. They work in construction, as domestic workers, as caregivers, and in other jobs. They can suffer enormous abuse because they are not protected by the labor laws of the country, such as they are, and are often tied to the particular employer who brought them into the country. And of course, they are not unionized. However, a group of women in Lebanon is fighting back. Radio Labor's senior correspondent, Seymour Ainsborough, has a report.
In a remarkable show of bravery, 200 women in Lebanon have formed the first migrant workers' union in the Arab world. The founding conference of the Domestic Workers Union was held in Beirut on Sunday, January 25th, despite threats by the police and the Ministry of Labor to disrupt the meeting. Lebanese law forbids the creation of unions for migrant workers. The result is that thousands of domestic workers from the Philippines, India, Pakistan, and other countries are left without protection. Under the sponsorship system called kafala, migrant workers are controlled by the employers who brought them into the country. Their passports are confiscated, and they cannot move to another job. Many of them end up in abusive situations, facing long working hours, no days off, sexual attacks, and very often no payment of wages for months. They cannot leave the country without the permission of the employer. The new union is called the General Union of Cleaning Workers and Social Care and includes in its constitution a regulation that Lebanese workers can join. This is an attempt to get around the rule that foreign workers cannot have their own unions. Unions of domestic workers are represented at the world level by the International Domestic Workers Federation. This is C. Marie Ainsborough reporting for Radio Labor.
Two huge multinational cement companies, Lafarge and Holcim, are in the process of merging their operations in more than 70 countries, including the U.S., Canada, and Britain. And while they're paying attention to their shareholders as the process goes on, they are ignoring their workers. I talked to Matthias Hartwig about the merger. Mr. Hartwig is the director of the Mechanical Engineering and Materials Industries Department of the Global Union Federation Industrial. I asked him why Industrial has started a campaign in support of the Lafarge-Holcim workers.
The workers' demands and their concerns have been ignored, and there has been no proper participation of workers and their trade unions. So there is a total lack of information and consultation. And as far as we are concerned, we have the feeling that there is not real respect for workers so far during this merger. And we must listen to the workers and their concerns and not only to the shareholders. That's why Industriall, BWI and European Federation of Building and Woodworkers said it's high time to give Lafarge and Holcim workers a voice.
What are some of the concerns of the workers?
Well, first of all, I mean, there is job insecurity. There is the insecurity, where will I end up tomorrow? And it already began. I mean, there has been disinvestment started. Dismissals have started. The reorganizations are underway. And this all on top of a weak economy in general and on top of announcements of both companies that there have been or there should be kinds of, well, what they call a better cooperation, coordination. And everybody knows that this often means loss of jobs. And even today, workers are losing their jobs, and that is one of the major concerns. So what is lacking is the respect for the 130,000 workers affected and the total lack of information and consultation. And this insecurity makes workers really angry and disappointed of their companies, because both companies always stated they are standing for sustainability and social dialogue.
Canada has not been known as a major destination for migrant workers, but that has changed because of a right-wing national government. The government has dramatically increased the number of temporary workers from countries such as the Philippines as a way of providing cheap labor for employers. I talked to Larry Hubick about the situation. Mr. Hubick is the president of the Provincial Saskatchewan Federation of Labor. I asked him how many temporary workers were in his province and what sort of work they do.
Well, Mark, since 2005, the number of temporary foreign workers in Saskatchewan has jumped an incredible 647%. Our province went from just about 1,300 temporary foreign workers in 2005 to nearly 10,000 in 2012. With regards to the kinds of jobs temporary foreign workers are doing, this is where the shocking abuse of the program really comes to light. Temporary foreign workers, or some variation of it, has been around. The program has been around for a long time. And from its inception until quite recently, it was meant as a program to fill fundamental gaps in Canada's workforce on an obviously very temporary basis. And they were most exclusively highly skilled, in-demand workers, such as specialist doctors, physicians, professors, highly trained tradespeople, expert nurses, and other such workers. But the Harper government has allowed corporations to abuse the program and exploit vulnerable workers from other countries who are just trying to make a living.
Now here with his report about the activities of Labor Start, the labor movement's news and campaigning service, is Derek Blackadder.
Every 6 minutes, a news story about a union somewhere around the world is posted on Labor Start. Here's a small sample of the news we collected since our last report. Last week, our top stories section included links to news about the formation of a union for migrant workers in Lebanon, the harassment of worker advocates in Hong Kong and China proper, and the global campaign to have Turkish hospital workers reinstated to their jobs after they were fired for organizing a union. Across the globe, we had coverage of strikes and lockouts in dozens of countries. Here are some highlights. Striking car parts makers in India were arrested for picketing. Sri Lankan power workers stopped work to protest the size of management salary increases. Construction workers in Panama ended their strike with a victory on all points in their dispute. South African bus drivers struck over late pay. Miners in Poland stopped work, started hunger strikes, and occupied mines to protest job cuts. Our top working women's stories included coverage of a new campaign against workplace violence directed at women by a Spanish union, the growth of the Angolan Committee of Trade Union Women, and a massive protest by Indian domestic workers after a 12-year-old housemaid was murdered by her employer. This week, LaborStart is running 5 online actions. All of these campaigns are requested by and sponsored by unions around the world. Join us in helping make workers' lives better, or even help save those lives. This is Derek Blackadder from LaborStart, reporting for Radio Labor.
And that's it. International labor news you can use. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting,
you're getting chewed out by
so
your
why would you do it while driving?
On what
NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job, every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families, just like yours.
Every day, I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day, I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day, I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. For more information about the show, go to theunionedge.com.
Environmental groups are suing over the expansion of one of the state's largest crude oil operations. The lawsuit contends the San Joaquin Air Pollution Control District illegally approved permits without environmental review of the risk of importing millions of gallons of toxic and potentially explosive oil. Matt Krogh with Forest Ethics says 5 million Californians live in the evacuation zone for an oil train derailment or explosion. He says it's too dangerous to allow the Bakersfield crude terminal to increase traffic without investigating the threat to air quality and public safety.
You see the potential for these oil trains passing through every major population center of California, crossing critical waterways and aquifer recharge zones, crossing through, you know, valuable farmland.
The California Energy Commission says oil shipments by railroad into California have hit an all-time record, which Krogh says also increases the risk of a disastrous spill.
That's rare, but it's a real risk. The other side, though, is that there is a chronic exposure for people all along the rail route to emissions from the trains in transit and from this terminal itself.
Krogh says California's weather is also a hazard for trains carrying volatile crude oil.
These tank cars, black ones, coming through California in the summer, and you actually have boiling contents with a constant popping of these pressure relief valves. And this is the sort of thing that needs to be studied and understood.
The lawsuit filed by Earth Justice maintains air district officials approved the permits in a piecemeal fashion to keep the project from getting public scrutiny. The Kern County terminal opened last year and is allowed to accept up to 100 crude oil trains a day, including those carrying volatile crude from the Bakken Shale Formation, as well as heavier and highly toxic tar sands. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.